I think we'll get started, everyone. I know we got a small group to start, but people usually trickle in on rainy days. Before we get started, Jordan, would you open us up in prayer this morning?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Lord, we praise you for who you are. We come together to study more about you, even as we think about how we steward our time, our resources, and our finances. Lord, we pray that you would help us to grow in how we honor and glorify you today. In your name, amen.
Amen. Okay, so I don't usually get to teach in the adult Sunday school class, but I was talking with the elders a couple months ago, and we were talking about how we don't talk about money a lot of times. And so we were talking, and there happened to be an opening in the schedule for teaching in here, and so we decided it would be a great opportunity to kind of actually talk about money and church and how money works in our own lives. But teaching a class on money, there's a lot of pros and cons on money in the church. There's a lot of good stories and bad stories of just how money is handled, good things that are done with money, bad things that are done with money. But can you guys think of any pros, or let's start with cons of even just talking about money in church?
Makes people scared.
Why would it make people scared?
I don't know. Yeah. Apprehensive.
A lot of people can start to feel, as soon as people start talking about money, it's a guilt complex. We're going to start guilting people into how much money are you giving. What are some other cons?
It can cause division.
Yeah, it can cause division about who's giving a lot, who's giving a little, what we're spending the money on. Can cause a lot of division too. Any other cons you guys can think of about just the conversation of money in church?
I think for sometimes the fear of non-believers are around. You know, they all the church around.
Yeah.
They care about. They might focus in on that. So it's a negative thing.
Yeah.
Fundraising all the time.
And you see that a lot with just how the world views the church. They can see there's a lot of, it's this big tax write-off. There's all this money going in there. There's been lots of conversations about the Mormon church and just how much money is flowing through there. And can kind of get a bad rap for, they're just trying to get money for their initiatives or what they want to do. And even personally, I think there can be a lot of pride that's built into money too, of how we handle our money. And we hear a lot just in the Bible of like money is the root of a lot of sin and a lot of evil. But on the flip side, what would be some good reasons to have conversations, like even in a group like this, about money in the church?
It's a subject that most people, because of how they were brought up, because it's not talked about in school, are probably pretty illiterate in.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important to talk about it from a Christian perspective, because like I grew up in a secular home, and we just didn't talk about that kind of stuff. So you don't know about it or understand it unless people that you trust or other believers are willing to talk about it and explain it to you also. And it impacts your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think money can often lead to impact.
Yeah.
It can catalyze things that otherwise wouldn't exist.
Totally. I think it's unique that it's something that we all have to deal with in some shape or form. You know, we have lots of issues in the church that we can talk about, and there could be parenting issues, which are different than marriage issues or men issues versus women issues, or stuff that's relevant here versus stuff that's relevant in another country. But money is something that we all deal with every day. And I think what's also unique is we're getting a ton of messages even outside of the church. Like, we're all in business, too, and we're growing businesses, we're working in the world all the time, and we are getting messages all the time about what the value of money is, how we should be handling it, and a lot of us base our whole businesses on that. And then we move into church, and we have to think about money, too, and a lot of times it's hard to meet those two things together and be able to, you know, think about it in a proper way that honors God. So, I think it's good to not think about it in a big picture of just money. Like even when we looked at this class, it was going to be, how's money used in the church? How's money used for giving? But what we're going to kind of move into is this idea of stewardship. So stewardship is how we use money. But I'd like you guys to think, if stewardship is something that we utilize in the regular business world too. So how would you define... I guess I have it on the screen now, so it's there. So I'm just going to read it. A little animation to pop it up didn't work. So even in the world, stewardship would be something that the world values and that they want, even in businesses. So a general definition of stewardship could be, it is the careful and responsible oversight of resources, whether property, finances, the environment, or even relationships, with the understanding that you are managing them on behalf of someone else or on the behalf of others. So I do this every day at work. I'm a consultant. People entrust me with their buildings, their utility bills, and I have to help them manage those things. So this stewardship in and of itself isn't necessarily a biblical thing all by itself. So if we were to transfer into how does that look for church or for us as Christians as stewardship, what's different about us versus how we steward in business? And this was the biblical definition that I was kind of working with or thinking, and I want us to kind of shape our minds as we go through this class. Is stewardship is the recognition that all things ultimately belong to God, and humans are called to wisely manage time, talents, treasures, and creation in a way that honors him. So as we look, we're not left without any examples. Like, we see examples of stewardship in the Bible. I listed some again up there. But how was Adam and Eve an example of stewardship? Yeah, it was actually a job that he gave them. Was God not capable of naming the animals or managing the garden? No, he was, but he gave that as a stewardship to give to them to manage that on behalf of him. We have the parable of the talents. We're going to be going through that today. It's one of our main scriptures that we go through. But we also see Proverbs littered with different examples and advice and insight on stewardship and how we are to manage money and to manage our lives. And you also see other examples like Joseph managing on behalf of leaders, or Daniel. And they were valued things that were valued in the Christian world, but also in the secular world. So we definitely see examples of it, and we have ways to look at it inside of our Bibles, and as we actually look for God's guidance on it. So we're not just left to the world and how they handle or how they steward. So let's go into the parable of the talents. So I'm going to have you guys open up to Matthew. Sorry. Grabbing it on my notes here. Matthew 24. Sorry. Verses 14 through 28.
That's different than the handout.
Okay, do it from the handout. Sorry, it was supposed to be on the side of this one, but I feel like it's...
The handout says 25.
There you go, 25. Let me grab my handout.
25, verse 14 through 30. There we go.
Okay. Mary Lee, could I get you volunteer to read that? Or is it too... Is that, would you?
How far do you want me to read?
Why don't you read the first paragraph, and then I'll get Aaron to read the second one, and then can I get a... Tanner. Would you read the third one? Your wife pointed to you.
For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them with his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money.
Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also, who had the 2 talents, came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had received the one talent, came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours.
But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Okay. So what are the characters that we have in this story?
Master and three servants.
So, who is the master in this story?
God.
Yeah, God. And he has three servants. And the first servant, he gives how many talents?
Five.
So he's giving a different amount of talents to each of the servants. So he gives the first servant 5. He gives the second 2. And he gives the last servant 1. And then he leaves. So he's not there. So he puts him in charge of these talents. So he's giving them the job of stewarding these talents. So he comes back, and what does the first servant do? Doubles it, right? Goes from 5 to 10. Second servant also doubles it. Doesn't make as much because he has less, but he's doubled it as well. And then third servant, what does he do? He buries it, right? So the master comes back, and he looks at what the servants have produced. The first one, he looks at it and sees that he has doubled his money in there. So had 5, made 5. A good return on the investment. And what does he say to the servant? What are the exact words that he uses?
Good and faithful servant.
Yeah, well done. Good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. So he sees what he's done, and he sees that his actions were actually faithful to what the Lord had put him in charge of to do with, okay? Second servant. And what's the reward that he gets there?
5 more.
Say it again?
5 more.
Oh, sorry. No, what does the Lord actually give as his, what's the reward for earning these 5, for doubling there?
He
gets a better job.
Yeah, enter in the joy with your master. Yeah, yeah. So the reward is, you've done this, you've earned 5, now enjoy your master. So come along, and I will put you in charge of much, but there's this connection of bringing him in with the master, okay? Now, second servant, how much does he earn?
2.
So he has 2, he's done 2, doubled it, but he's also, he's earned not as much. Now, does the master have a different reward for that servant? He's had a little bit, but he also doubled that. No, he says the same thing to him. He says, you also were faithful in what you did. And the reward is that, well, you'll be second in command. I put this guy first, you're second. What is the reward for him?
Same,
exact same thing that we see for the first one. Now we get to the third servant, who's different than the first two. And what is his rationale? What does he say he did with the money? Anyone?
He was afraid.
He was afraid. So what did he do with the money? He buried it. Okay. And the master comes back, and he is upset. And he looks at what the servant has, and he says, you haven't done anything with this. You buried it. You could have at least even had a little faith and put it in the bank, and it earned money. So he wasn't even expecting as much as what he had from the other ones. He said, you could have put it in the bank and made a little bit, and I still would have been happy with that, but you did nothing. You left it in the ground. And he says, well, what was his reason for doing this?
Well, he assessed his boss,
yeah,
but as being a cruel and hard man.
Yeah.
And he spoke it out. The others might have thought it, but they didn't say anything about what a
hard master he was.
Yeah, he seemed scary. And he said, I knew you as a hard man. But everything we've also seen here is the master has rewarded. He's been generous. Whether it was 2 talents or 5 talents, the Lord has been generous with him.
He actually had a mind of fear.
Yeah, yeah. He was afraid, and he was also afraid to take a risk there. When we first look at this, I think a lot of times we can look at this parable and go, well, the meaning of the parable is work hard and God's going to bless you. But when we really look at how each of these servants viewed their master, you see that the focus is really on the faithfulness of the servants, not necessarily even the work that they did, but their faithfulness and how they viewed the master. So the first two, the master gave them this, and they took a risk, and they looked at the investment and said, I'm going to spend my time growing this, knowing that the master is going to come back and he's going to reward that, and that there's this. And the second one did that too. Even though it wasn't as much, he was given differently. He looked at it and said, I trust that the master is wise in giving this to me and that I can grow it. And I will spend my time doing this, knowing that the master, that's what the master's called me. I trust in who he is. And the third one, he didn't even put it in the bank. He buried it. And we see more of his view here of, he could have done a little bit, but he was really serving two masters. He was serving himself. He said, I want to bury this so I can work on my own stuff, so that I can build my own wealth. And if the master comes back, I'll just give it to him. If he doesn't come back, I can just keep it for myself. But he's not actually serving the master. He's serving himself and what he did. And as we look at this, you actually see him call that out where he says, Master, I knew you to be a hard man. And like seeing how the other servants, we're really seeing that third servant didn't really know his master. And what's unique in here too is it wasn't just invest this, do a good job, and you get a reward. If you do a good job, you don't get a reward if you don't help. There's actually punishment in there because he wasn't serving his master. And so when we look at this, at first glimpse, we talked about how the moral story isn't just work hard, but it's how we view and how we follow faithfulness with what the Lord has entrusted to us. From an accounting standpoint, I can look at this and say, why isn't God happy? Like if you add up all the talents and we had 15, we started with 8 talents, we got 15. If the Lord looked at it, you know, he got a 87.5% on his investment. And if you divide that across the 3, that's actually still pretty good. But for the master, it wasn't about how much money they had actually produced or how much he was actually receiving back. It was how those servants served and trusted in what he was going to do when he came back. We can't serve two masters. And the parable and the servant is trying to serve himself, not trusting and serving God. The parable is actually about faith. He didn't even have weak faith, a little bit of faith, and just putting it in the bank so that he had something for his master when he came back. So when we look at stewardship, the key thing in here, when we look at that definition that we started with, stewardship is the recognition that all things ultimately belong to God, like we saw in that parable, those talents belong to God. And humans are called to wisely manage time, talents, treasures, and creation in a way that honors God for him. So that faithfulness is really a key in how we look at stewardship. Not about how much fruitfulness we necessarily get there, but the faithfulness behind that. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna talk a little bit about fruitfulness versus faithfulness. So fruitfulness is the result of work that's done. So you can have actions that are done, they produce desirable, beneficial, or abundant results marked by productivity, effectiveness, or positive impact. Fruitfulness is about results. But like we saw in that parable, there was different amounts of fruitfulness in there. The master talked about 10% from just in the bank. There was one man who got 2, one servant that got 5. We're going to be talking about fruitfulness as we go through this study. But really, fruitfulness is what the Lord is doing with the talents. Like, he's growing those things for us. The other thing is faithfulness, and that's what we're really called to when we're going to steward. It is a steady, steadfast, loyal, and reliability over time. The quality of being consistent, committed, trustworthy, and true to one's word, duty, and beliefs. So faithfulness is about commitment. The key thing I want to take as we go through this study is God doesn't need your money. He doesn't need the church's money. Yet, we have the wonderful opportunity to glorify him as we spend our money. And I think that's truly what it comes down to in stewardship, is we have this opportunity to glorify, to show faithfulness, to show the world, to show the church who we see God is through how we steward his resources. So the way that we're going to be breaking up this class is our first class today is on stewardship in the church. So we're first going to talk about, okay, the church receives money and has money. How does the church glorify God and steward money well as it spends its money? And then class two, so next week we're going to focus in on stewardship and the giver. And so actually talking about what it looks like to be a good, faithful steward when we give as individuals. So first knowing how the church spends its money, and when we're giving to the church, how do we do that? And then the third class, we're going to focus in on stewardship in all things. So how do we do that in our personal lives and everything, not just in how we give, but how we spend our money, how we work. So we're going to keep kind of referencing back to those first things that we talked about: stewardship, the parable of the talents, fruitfulness, faithfulness. Today we're going to go through how we actually do that in the church and how we spend it. So I get to, like, once a year have budget meetings with Jordan and the church, and we get to talk about budgets. But you guys get a big long list of numbers and line items, and it can feel very much a business sense. So what we really want to go through here is really talk about how and why we budget and what we are really focusing on and how we are trying to do what we saw in the parable of the talents inside of our actual church budget. Again, the goal of this class is not to guilt people into giving more or to make people nervous and say, hey, you guys should all be giving a little bit more. What are you guys doing? One of the reasons we chose this time to do it is because we're doing great. Our income is over our budget right now. It's a really good time to talk about money because we're not here to guilt people. And generally as a church, we really go away from that. But this is a good time for us to actually talk through those things and get excited just about how we can be faithful to God. So as we go through it, don't think about, am I supposed to give more? Am I giving too much? Not enough? But think about how your mindset is and how you give and how you think about your life, how you think about your finances, and how we can be faithful. Okay. Why does God care about the church budget? How we spend money reflects how we view God. Church budget is a reflection of theology, values, and priorities. So if you were to pull open that big long sheet that has all the numbers and you see all the categories, you can see what is really valued in the church as well. You can see what's really important, what's less important. And you could probably see the same thing as at a business. If you looked at a business budget, you'd kind of see what they really focus in or what they put a lot of emphasis on. So how we actually set up that budget says a lot to the world and our congregation about how we value God and how we see him. And like we saw in the parable, that was how the servants saw their master. We could see based on how they produced. So what does faithfulness for us look like? Two items here, obedience and risk. Part of being faithful is being obedient to how God has called us to be faithful. We can accomplish great things for God in our own way and with our own rules, and that's not necessarily faithfulness. God's ways are always better than our ways. So a great example of this is we could collect everybody's money and we could go put it in mutual funds and we could grow this really well, or we could put it in different ways, but we really need to be focused on how God has called us to grow and to be faithful and to collect for the church. We could also cheat on our taxes. We could go rob a bank. And these are all ways that we could be fruitful. We could get more money. But part of it is being obedient to how God has called us to do these things. We don't want to be preaching a prosperity gospel where we tell people, hey, if you just give more money, God's going to bless you more. We want to be faithful and obedient in how the Lord has called us to utilize funds. And then There's an element of risk in there too. When obedience means risking what this world loves, it becomes a bold statement about the goodness and trustworthiness of the master. So even the fact that we're spending money on these things, spending money on meeting together, the world sees what we are valuing and what we are doing here. Or even taking risks of sacrificing our money to send missionaries out, putting our money together to help out in the local church. All these things the world may not see as valuable. And even sometimes in our lives, we can feel like, is this really what we should be doing? It feels a little risky, just like the third servant. And he said he wasn't willing to take that risk. But we know that even when we don't always see the outcomes, the Lord is faithful in those things. And that's where he calls us to be faithful. So being faithful in that is being obedient to do it the way that he has designed it, and to trust him and to take the risk of knowing that his way is better than what the world offers. So what are we called as a local church? So if we're collecting money in the local church, what is the mission that we're supposed to be collecting money for? The local church really is summarized in Matthew 28, 18 through 20. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." So as a church, what are we called to be collecting money for? What are we called to be spending our money on? Exactly what it describes in here. Our job as a church is to be making disciples. That's going to be our first focus as a church, is spend our money on making disciples and to be baptizing them and to be teaching them, to be growing them, teaching them how to worship, teaching them how to evangelize, teaching them how to be good servants. And that is what we should be spending our money on. And so everything that we look at when we're trying to spend our money is focusing back on, is that the local church? There's lots of other things that we could spend our money on. We can make the most beautiful building possible. Does that necessarily achieve that? What we really want to make sure is that we are keeping accountable to what the Lord has called us. That's what he says is the best use of our money as the local church. So budgeting, if that is, and that's a very high, lofty, pastoral, theological calling for us. So budgeting at the church really is not just accounting, but it's pastoral work. And it's looking to see how is the Lord calling us to do those things, to disciple, and how do we spend our money there? If it was just about how we spend money the best, we could hire an accountant, we could hire a firm somewhere, and they could just tell us, invest here, invest that, this is how much you should budget on those. But part of how we spend our money is really focused on where's the Lord leading our church, and how are we doing that best? The budget, again, it reflects what we value. So our budget should be covering all those items that we saw in that verse. It should be teaching. It should be about shepherding. It should be about how do we administer those things. So when we look at it, it really is a combination of not just the finance team that's deciding how church uses their money. It's elders being involved with how we divide up that money. It's deacons who are helping execute and develop and read into the church of what's working and what's not working. And then the congregation who is supporting that budget and is also implementing it and how we do those. I'm trying to make sure I stay on time with this. So in detail, a lot of times what the elders are doing as the leadership is doing is helping set what our income is from what's coming in. They're looking at high level allocation of how do we divide up our funds across the whole church and working with the finance team on that. Basic quality control to make sure that we're using our money wisely, and then also balancing some of those long-term and short-term goals. We have times where we need to be looking way out, but also we have issues that are coming up fast. So a lot of times leadership is dealing with how do we manage that or navigate that. Also, leadership has to take big decisions when it comes to having to make a deviation from what we've said we're gonna spend our money on, and then an issue comes up, they have to help make that decision of how do we deviate on certain things when there is a big need or a big problem. And then there's also this level in pastoral work leadership of communicating that to the church and making sure that they understand it. We don't want books to be closed books where nobody knows where money's going and it's just things happen. It's part of our faithfulness as a body to do that together. So our next class, we're going to talk more about income, and because we're going to talk about giving. But I think a big just takeaway before we go into that, just as we go into this of how we budget, is from a leadership component, it's less important than you think focusing in on our income. We could have a congregation that gives faithfully, and that's what we want, and still miss our budget. And on the vice versa, we could have a congregation that gives unfaithfully, and we still meet our budget. And so really, from a leadership standpoint, is we want to make sure that our congregation is giving faithfully in their lives. And then we look at the budget to say, how does that work with that? And that's why an important part, even while we're talking about money today, is we want to make sure that our congregation, again, that you understand why you're giving, what you're giving for, how the church uses that, so that you can give faithfully. And then we work the budget off of that. So, more details, but big picture budget breakdown of how typically the budgets are broken up is we have the staff section that focuses on our staff. We have our program section that focuses on programs that equip the congregation. We have missions and outreach, that would be like local missions and global missions, and then the operations of the church. All four of these areas have different roles, but they're all essential to running the church. So staff, supporting the servants of the word. A lot of times there's questions on, should we even have paid staff at a church? Why don't we just have volunteers for this? Can someone open up to Galatians 6, verse 6? And then another person, can I get a volunteer for that? Jocelyn? And then Mike, could you read 1 Timothy 5, 17 through 18?
Galatians 6, 6. Let the one who has taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches.
Okay, Mike.
1 Timothy 5:17 and 18. Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, "You shall not muzzle an ox when it is treading out the grain," and the laborer deserves his wages.
So biblically, we do see strong examples of the local church funding the people in the church that are teaching and preaching in there. And especially when we look at our church, there's one thing that we want to make sure we get right and that we do well, it's the teaching of the word. Now, you could have 10 pastors, you could have one pastor, but when it comes to the word of God, we want to be top notch on there. Because if we mess up with how we teach the congregation, if we have a bad leader who doesn't have a life that matches what he's teaching, it can be catastrophic for the church. And so especially, we see it biblically. There were times when Paul wasn't paid, but it was more as an example, not as the norm. It was an exception. But we see that dedicating that is an important part of how the church works. Now, we still want to be wise in how we do that. And make sure that we're paying correctly. So part of that is making sure that we provide well for our pastor and make sure that his needs are met so that he can focus on preaching the word. If we're too tight on, oh, well, a pastor only needs this much or the church can only afford this, if a pastor is constantly worrying about how is he going to make ends meet, how is he going to pick up extra jobs, so this, he's going to be more torn from being able to preach the word well. And so really, a lot of times when we see on how the church handles paying, there's words of generosity, there's words of coming behind, a double blessing in there. So we want to make sure, especially as we do that, staff a lot of times can be one of the biggest portions of the budget. We want to do it wisely, but we also want to, as a church, support our leaders well. And so especially with pastors, it can come in, when we look at that, it's not... Pastors are paid so many different wages across the valley. It's one of the hardest ones to kind of figure out how you pay. But really, a stance that the church will take is, how do we meet his needs so that he's not left lacking? We don't need to pay him crazy amounts, but we need to make sure that he can preach the word well and not be distracted by that.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What are some of the ways that Witten does that? What are some of the ways that Witten ensures that the pastor and his family's needs are met when it comes to how you guys decide how to pay?
Perfect. We're going to answer that. And that's actually something I forgot to say is, So the way we set up these classes is the first half, I'm going to talk through kind of like the theological issues and basics of how the church in general should do this. The last 15, 20 minutes, we're going to actually, Jordan's going to come up here, and I have a list, and that's one of the questions, is how do we actually do that at WABC? And so we're going to do that in each of these classes, is actually talk a little bit about how we exactly do that. That's a perfect question, and one of the best ones we have on there. So we want to be generous, not lacking, providing so that they can focus. And other times we need other staff, too, at the church. So how do we decide when we need to have other staff? Part of that is we want to be able to free up the pastor so that he can preach. We don't want things that are taking away from him on that. And the other aspect that we look at as a church and as the church in general is how do we, what positions do we need that will equip the congregation to minister? A lot of times churches can go in there and say, hey, we're going to hire this person because they're going to go do the minister and it relieves the congregation from ministering. Every staff member that we look at or consider, it needs to be someone who enables the congregation. We don't want to be just a church of providers for our members, but we're, our job, like we saw in the Great Commission, is to equip them. So we don't want to hire one guy that's going to go out and evangelize for everybody. We want to hire a guy who's going to teach how to evangelize in the church and raise up. So that's an important aspect of how we look at staffing. And Jordan's going to bug me in 5 minutes to make sure I'm done so we can get our questions. I'm going to be done. So staffing, programs, equipping the congregation. So when we look at the programs and how we fund those, prioritizing programs that are faithful to our calling as a local church. So our program should focus in on our local church here. How does it make disciples and train them? And so can you guys think of what would be an example, even in our church, of what's a program?
PBS
would be a program.
Children's
ministry is a program.
What about what Eric does with the neighborhood of the women?
Yes, I would put that as, that's one of our outreach mission ones. So that wouldn't be programs. So specifically in our definition here, programs are things that are equipping our people in our church. So a great example would be children's ministry, men's ministry, women's ministry, even our worship team, in a sense, is a program in our church, but it's what we're doing internally to equip. So in everything that we're doing there, we want to make sure that we are focusing in on what type of community we are growing, not necessarily how many people we're attracting. So as we look at those ministries, like, say, men's ministry, for example, our goal isn't to have a big paintball event so that we can attract as many men to come to the paintball event, but we may do a paintball event so that we can get those guys at our church together. They're doing things like that, but then they're also building a community and growing it. So you can almost do the same thing and have the wrong mindset behind it in different ways. But everything that we're doing, breakfast, coffee time, is how are we being faithful in that to make sure that we are building a stronger community that's equipping and growing, not necessarily just trying to attract people. And it can make a big difference as you start to grow in there. What people are attracted to in your church is usually what they're going to stay for. So if people are attracted because of all the fancy bells and whistles you have, you're going to have to keep those going to keep people here. If they're attracted by the community that you've grown, they're going to stay for the community that's here. So we're always constantly looking at when we're budgeting is how do we see those? Are we successful in those? Are those actually doing their job in there? And that's how, as we see fruit in there for what the Lord's doing, that's how we grow budgets on this. Mission and outreach. Mission and outreach is one of the harder ones to budget in the church because it's not like a typical normal nonprofit. Normal nonprofit, you invest money in something and you get a straight return from it. Even in Christian ones, like just I'm on Gospel Partners with Stavo and we collect money to translate books. We know exactly how much to pay for 1,000 books. And if we only sell 500, we know that's not successful. In the church, we have to make long-term investments in missions out there. And we don't always necessarily see the returns on those. Or we're investing in leaders. And some of these things, we don't always see these great things. So what we try to do is, especially when we look at missions and outreach, is how do we set those up to be the most successful? Funding from a distance is hard. So here are a couple of things that we try to focus in as we decide who our local missionaries are, who our global missionaries are, but finding missions that focus on the local church. So when we look at global missions, are they growing local churches where they're at? Or are we just sending kids to go do a missionary trip? How are they supporting that local church out where they're at? Also looking at what we know, like what we're familiar with, so that we can be accountable and know that. So if we have connections with a region of the world, that's an area that we're going to focus on because we'll be able to keep more accountability there. Funding to know more. So we fund so that we can be connected and stay on top of those and know more about them. So we could have 100 missionaries that we're each giving $500 to, or we could have, you know, 4 missionaries that we're giving $5,000 to. And when we have less, we can actually fund to know more about each of those. It's manageable because we want to have that connection. That moves into the mutual dependence. We want to be connected. We're depending on them and knowing what's going on, but we can also be a support to them and be feeding them, not just financially, but also be connected with that missionary. And then making sure that we're connecting with missions that we can do for the long haul. So making sure that we're building those relationships, making sure that we're theologically in line so that this isn't a short-term thing, but something that we can do for years to come. Not all good causes are good investments for the church. We could invest money in the Red Cross, but that's not what the local mission has called us to here. And there are good causes out there, but as the local church, we're called to be supporting the local church and the Great Commission. I have one slide left, Jordan, before I'm done. So operations, so this is our actual building. So operations should help the church proclaim and portray who God is. So when we look at the operations, that's going to be our admin, that's going to be the buildings, our insurance policies, all those. We want to make sure that they're a mirror of who God is and that they support the church as a messenger to the world. So we should, as a church, strive for excellence because we do reflect God. We should do what we do well. We shouldn't have buildings that are run down. We should make sure that we have good follow-up. Our ministries are well because we reflect a good and perfect God. And a lot of times we do that through deacon staff. And sometimes we have paid staff for those items. And we kind of talk through some of those staffing issues. But operations should free up the congregation so that they can minister. There are certain times where we have people do work in the church, like cleaning things or helping with the yard stuff. But if we're spending all of our time as a church trying to keep up with operations and not able to go minister, then we probably need to spend money on operational stuff. So like Kara at our church is one of the people that is our operational admin person. And a key role for her is she frees up the congregation to be able to serve so that we don't have me spending all my time trying to do volunteers or Chris spending his time doing that. But operations should not define a ministry. We want to build our operations around what the ministry is that we have here. And every decision we make, if we're building a playground out there, it's not because we need a cool new playground and that's what's going to attract people, but we want to focus in on how is that being a meeting point for people? How is that going to encourage our young people? How do we bring, we want to be thinking about it in all those aspects. The church is a meeting place for believers to worship God. It's not this fancy temple that we're trying to build up in the community, but we want to build in how we actually glorify God and do that through our budget. Boom, I'm pretty much done. So in summary, budgeting is an act of worship. We're called to faithfulness, not just efficiency, and we should steward all things for God's glory, not ours. So what I'm going to do is move into some questions with Jordan. So I'm going to invite Jordan up here. So I used to be deacon of admin and finance, and Jordan came along the last couple of years, and I told him we'd sit so that it's less weird standing up here. But so we're going to go through just some questions on how we do that at Witten. So Jordan, who at WABC is involved in creating and approving the budget each year?
Yeah, so this is, it's definitely something to go through every March with you guys just in terms of when we go through the budget, but obviously just to hit on it again here. As we start the budget process, like we talked about in this class, we start with elders, deacons, and finance team, specifically like end of the year, early January is when we kind of start talking about, okay, what does the next year's budget look like? So from the elders, from meeting with the elders, from communication and deacons meetings, Because I don't know if you guys all know this, but every month we have at least one deacon meeting with all the deacons and elders included. And so that in those meetings, it comes up to of like, what do we see as in terms of needs for the church in terms of the budget, especially as we get towards December and January. And then obviously the finance team, which is you, me, and Eric.
Yeah. So during the year, we have a combination of all of those. We have elders involved at a certain point. We have deacons who we're familiar with throughout the year.
Yeah.
And then we also, the budget goes to the congregation for approval. And that's actually one of the few things that we vote on as a church is the budget. So you kind of answered that on what the elders and deacons each do in the process. How do we decide? Oh, yeah.
That one is the deacons propose, if the deacons over a certain ministry area, they propose this is what I think it'd be the same, want to increase this. Do they propose numbers and the elders and approve that? Or is it just the deacons share this is what needs to happen? Figure out the amount, how does that work?
So it's a little bit of a combination of both.
Yeah.
So what's nice is because we view finances as a pastoral shepherding type thing, it's important for our finance team. So Jordan and I being in contact with the deacons all throughout the year so that we're kind of feeling and knowing what's going on in there. But specifically at the end of the year, we'll meet with the deacons to say, hey, what did you want to do this year, and were you able to financially do that? Is there stuff that you want to do more that you don't think you can do? And then we'll take that talk with the elders and say, hey, this ministry wants to do a little bit more, or they felt like they were doing great on this, and talk about, does that really align in here? So if children's ministry says they want
a new curriculum, and that did happen this last year with Kiana, like we want to update and do a new curriculum, that's something that we factor in terms of at the end of the year, like, okay, kids ministry is looking at this new curriculum, how much does that cost, does that look like, and how can we fit that into the budget?
So we try to keep it a very interactive process in there, but yeah, deacons have a lot of say in there, but ultimately it's the elders because they're responsible for shepherding the church to ultimately say, yeah, this is the direction we're going. But again, some of the elders are great at finance, some of them suck at finance, and so it's like, I won't say any names.
Let's talk about it.
And that's why it's not a checks and balance system of the finance team is deciding this and then it goes over to the elders. We're really a tool and a resource for the elders where they can focus on shepherding and we can help figure out how that happens and give them the support to make sure that we do that in an honoring way to God.
Yeah, and I think that's to that point, it's like, we don't want them spending two or three elders meetings going over every line item in the budget. So that's why in that early January timeframe, we want to have a high level like, okay, here's what last year's budget looked like. Here's where we're going forward, looking at this year's budget. And like, what are you guys in terms of our goals of this upcoming year? What does that look like? So that's in terms of like, we're not trying to make the elders spend multiple elders meetings or multiple weeknights going over and pouring over each line item of the budget, but we definitely want to give them the high level of like, what does this look like for our church?
Yeah. I'm going to combine the next two questions, which were, how do we decide what roles are paid versus volunteer? And then what are the principles that kind of guide decisions about how we pay the pastor and staff? So maybe since Jenny brought that one up, what are the guiding principles for how we decide to pay the pastor and staff?
To your point of we want to provide for needs as fits that the pastor and as we look towards like staff, what that looks like in terms of providing and helping the pastor in those roles. So I think that was helpful when Greg had it up there, obviously pastor to shepherd and teach the gospel and the staff to help equip and take off different things that can equip the pastor to do that more. So we definitely want those two to work in sync. And when we think about hiring staff, and then obviously it's in terms of our pastor specifically paying him for what, one, as Greg mentioned, it's a little hard in terms of like kind of figuring out all of like how the Valley pays different pastors and stuff like that. But we use resources to kind of like determine, okay, where are the buckets? What are the windows? And how do we align with those? And then two, obviously working with Chris to see like what are the needs of our pastor for immediately and like as we think of down the road future wise.
And we actually have a small committee that works on wages specifically. So it's not Chris just picking out his own salary and that's what we do. But and it's also not just the elders. It's a combination of usually have an elder, we have a deacon, we have somebody finance, and we change it up sometimes. But their job is to really identify what we can do as a church and what does Chris need. And then we balance that out every year to what we can do to make sure that that works well. Other staffing positions, it's a little bit easier. We want to pay what industry pays. We don't want to be too cheap, but we also don't want to be over the top either. So we're looking at other resources. We always print up reports on how we pay, how different churches pay. So we're focusing in on those. But that's also why we don't want to necessarily be a provider church where we're just providing services. So a lot of times we're pretty limited as a church on what we do staff-wise, because we try to push that into voluntary positions, deacon positions, not only because that's cheaper, because we're willing to pay when it's the right position to equip our church, but we want to be a local church where our congregation learns to serve, where they can serve, and they're not just coming here to be provided for. Jocelyn.
So then how do you decide when it's time to pay, not like Chris, but a deacon role or a volunteer role? I mean, not a volunteer role, but
yeah.
Like the question before that says, how do you decide what staff roles are paid versus a volunteer?
Yeah, a really great way that we kind of look at that is if somebody's doing a job, if they were to leave, are there other people in the church that could easily fill that? Then it's probably more of a volunteer position. If that person was to leave and we're really dependent on them and that's become a position, we start to look at, do we need to financially support that? Because we don't want to burn people out, but we also want to make sure that we don't need to be paying every position in the church. Like, we should learn to serve and steward our time as well. So there's not like an exact clear answer on that, but we're always trying to kind of like look at that. So a lot of times, like in our church, Joe is paid because he spends a lot of time on that. And if he was to leave, it would give a huge gap. But he also, as part of that, equips other people to do worship team. Kiana does that. Kara does that. Those are our staff right now that do that. But in the past, there's been stipends or payments for like youth pastors, or you may have an associate pastor if we have another person who's preaching. So, and I'd also encourage you guys, if we don't get through all the questions today, you guys can also email us this week and we can bring up some more questions next week if we don't get through all of them. And if we don't touch them all today, we may start the next class with some of those. But how do we evaluate which ministries or programs receive funding year to year?
Again, that goes back to those conversations with deacons and elders of like, okay, where is our church? Where are we growing? Where do we need to think about and kind of plan for either immediate or future needs in terms of like kids ministry or facilities? Do we have a big, like we just did the roof this past year, 2 years ago, I guess, like where are those big needs? And obviously those are large examples. But like when we think of those programs in those areas of the budget, what do we need to put money to and where do we need to grow in?
Yeah. And a lot of times when you guys see the outline that comes out from the elders every year in the members meeting packets that say, hey, here's our big goals for this year, whether it's we're really focusing on local missions or we're really focusing on holiness and purity or discipleship, we take all those and even with the elders and look at, do we need to adjust some budgets for this year to focus more? If we're focusing in on discipleship, do we need to spend a little bit more money on men's and women's ministry because we're specifically, that's a goal as a church this year? So it's a little bit of both, but we're kind of comparing years before what's been accomplished and what we can do, still being frugal with all those. What's the process for deciding how much of our budget goes to global missions and local outreach?
Yeah, so I think something that's maybe not unique, but it could be unique depending on where you come from. We don't have like a set like percentage or amount we want to spend of the budget or put from the budget towards global and local missions. Obviously that year to year that kind of comes up with depending on where we're at with local missions or global missions, how much we put towards that. Obviously, we have several that we've historically been involved with global missions, and then even this past year, a new one in terms of Chris Dawkins and his ministry. And then obviously, the Grove is another big one for local missions, and then Phoenix Rescue Mission, Hope Women's Center, and some other like local neighborhood stuff that we have historically and can future-wise will continue to partner with. And obviously, as we think about like, do we need to grow in any of those areas? Do we need to expand any of those or look towards any new ministries? We do that. And that kind of happens specifically in those kind of like early end of the year, early part of the year budget meetings.
And even in the last couple of years, we've sat down at the end of the year with elders and looked at the percentages on those different categories and said, hey, you know what? Like, this does represent how we view God. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we looked at it and said, no, we really, like, look what percentage local missions and global missions is. Like, does this accurately represent the heart of the church and what we feel called? And we started growing some of those areas, even just financially, financially and ministry-wise. We focused on how do we build that ministry and how can we fund that? Because we want it to represent the importance of global and local missions in the church as well. And that kind of answers this next question of examples of times when we've had to shift funding based on ministry fruitfulness or church needs. So a great one for church need is we saw a bigger need for local missions and global missions. So we started moving some money as we started finding new ministries. But Jordan, I don't know if you have any other examples of that.
No, I mean, that's specifically been over the years. Like, obviously, I said we don't have a set percentage, but to his point, we look at percentages and say, like, okay, is this as God has called us to growing, one, our local body and our local church, and then two, growing, because even as he had up there, like, in terms of our global missions, what are we looking for? And it's like building up the local church, building up those ministries that they're working on. And so that's probably the biggest one in the past couple of years, I would say. And then I think with as we looked at, like, past year, what are our goals? One of them specifically was, like, growing a culture of discipleship. So obviously, like, leadership development, men's and women's ministry and aspects like those, like, maybe not shifting, like, a ton. You wouldn't have seen, like, a huge line item shift, but we saw, like, hey, we want to provide more for our book stall and our library to, like, grow our church in as we provide, like, the monthly books that we read. Like, we want to provide for those aspects. And so it's not like we shifted. You wouldn't see, like, huge line item numbers, but we definitely want to, as those goals, we think about every beginning of every year and as we look towards the future of that year, shifting some things here and there.
That's also why we keep a fairly good reserve fund. It's also why we keep a couple benevolence funds, one for missions, one for local needs. We keep money in there so that we can shift around when needed and when the Lord brings up stuff.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to just quick answer this one because we're out of time. But a portion of our budget does go to just building maintenance and utilities and insurance. And that's also an important part because if the lights go out, we can't preach the gospel here. But that is the focus. Like, we don't want to be like, how do we make it as fancy as possible? But we want to represent God well, and we want to make sure that we keep the buildings open, that we do a good job with that, and that we don't have an insurance claim that messes up the whole church and we can't, and we get sued. Like, all those things are important for us to continue the gospel and continue to do those things. So we'll try to leave more time at our next class to answer more questions, and we can go back to this topic, and we'll talk about giving next week and how that is, how the church collects money and also how we give money as individuals. On the back of your sheet as well, I gave two resources if you guys are interested. The Healthy Church Budget book is one that we use. Everybody that's on the finance team reads that book, and it really gives a lot of this background. But if you're also looking just personally, like, how we set up stuff at the church, how we fund stuff, how we build, the Trellis and the Vine is a great one that most of the deacons and elders read together, which is just another good one to kind of get that idea behind the back of it. So I'm going to close this in prayer, and then you guys got to go pick up your kids. Lord, thank you for time, just being able to be reminded, Lord. We serve you, Lord. We're excited to glorify you and have the opportunity to praise you, worship you, and bring honor to you through how we are faithful and how we spend your money, Lord. And I just pray that we would do that as a church, as individuals, as ministries, and we just love and thank you for that. In your name we pray. Amen.